If you would open up to Genesis chapter 39, Genesis chapter 39. So often through our study of Genesis, we've referred to Galatians chapter 6, verses 7 and 8 about, do not be deceived, God is not mocked. What a man sows, he will also reap. And so often we've had to look at that in such a negative light of, you see people who are deceptive, you see them later on be deceived by others. You see people who go around sowing things in terms of partiality. You see all of a sudden they become the victim of partiality. You see these things come over and over again in the cycles. Now you start to see Joseph, and you see how he's going about things is always tied around what is righteous, what is holy, what he is doing. And now to see how God takes care of him, even through the midst of difficulties, to still reap what he's been sowing. You don't mock God. Don't be deceived to think it turns out a different way. And so last week as we went through Genesis 39 to see the beginnings, and once again, chapter 39, Joseph is about 17 years old at the beginning of the chapter. By the time you get to the end of the chapter, his age is going to be around 28 years old. And so you have this time lapse of about 11 years through chapter 39. And seeing these things come together, here he is. He's taken into Potiphar's household as a slave. Potiphar can tell that the hand of the Lord is with him, that the Lord is with him. And he puts more on Joseph. And seemingly until the point where everything is under Joseph's control. And Potiphar can even look and tell that these things are happening because the Lord, the covenant God, is with him. And in seeing that, all of a sudden things continue. Everything seems to be going well. And then, of course, Potiphar's wife decides that she wants to lay with him. He's a very desirable young man, beautiful in terms of beauty is not the word it uses, but handsome in form and even appearance. And she doesn't just do it once. You see her daily coming after Joseph. And you think, you just have to fail once to fail. And yet you see Joseph in all these things. He has the words to say in terms of, how could I do this and this great evil and sin against God? This is the way he sees his integrity and his character. I'm doing this because of who God is. I'm not going to turn away from him. Look at what he's done for me in my life in terms of going sold off as a 17-year-old by his brothers. Now here he is as a slave in Potiphar's household, yet here's the favor of God, blessings. He's prospering in terms of name and character. And all of a sudden, here she is. And of course, he continually turns her down. And in doing that, then it turns around. And one day, she grabs a hold of a garment. He runs out and he flees. Maybe you think about 1 Corinthians chapter 6, where Paul writes about and says, flee sexual immorality. Run. It is not something to be entangled in, to play with, to even draw close to. He says, run. And sure enough, that's what Joseph does. Even though what Paul wrote is not going to be written for a few thousand years. So here he is. He's on the run. She grabs a hold of the garment. She's holding on to it until her husband comes home. Then she tells him the story. Verse 17 says, this Hebrew slave whom you brought to us came in to me to make sport of me. And as I raised my voice and screamed, he left his garment beside me and fled outside. And from verse 19, apparently Potiphar believed her. Because look at how he responds. Now when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spoke to him, saying, this is what your slave did to me, his anger burned. He is furious. And what has Joseph done wrong? Nothing. You ever had somebody be really angry at you and you did nothing wrong? How fun of a situation is that? It's not fun at all. And there are even times where you know what, there's no way I can really clear my name here in this situation. And you have to decide, am I still going to do what's right? Or am I going to try to justify myself saying things that I shouldn't say or doing things that shouldn't be done? Now, here's Joseph. He's a slave in this household, even though he's over everything except for Potiphar and Potiphar's wife and the food that Potiphar eats. Now, look at verse 20. And here's what happens. It says, so Joseph's master took him and put him into the jail, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in the jail. You think of coming to this point. Now, under Egyptian law, and you can go back and read some of these things for yourself, in ancient Egypt, the penalties for adultery were extremely severe for the woman, but not so much for the man. It was definitely a double standard. For a woman to be caught in adultery would probably cost her her life. For the man, there's some sources that talk about you could be beaten with 1,000 lashes, but it may not cost him his life. But here's what's so unique about this story. What's never claimed that there was ever any adultery that actually happened. This is all just a made-up idea by Potiphar's wife, trying to sell a story to her husband about what this slave that you brought in has done. This one that's brought you all this prospering wealth, all these wonderful things. He says, look at what he's done. And Potiphar believes her. Now, you think of this situation. Notice how this continues on into verse 21. But the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. Here's Joseph thrown into prison for doing what is righteous behavior. Whenever you meet opposition, whenever you do what's right, do you always feel thankful to God? Is that typically our first response? Oftentimes, whenever we encounter a difficulty because we've done what's right, we kind of start to wonder, why do I have to endure such a thing? Now remember, in chapter 39, there are four times where it's going to mention that the Lord, the covenant God, is with Joseph. And yet you see these glimpses of things as it comes through. To be sold off by your brothers at the age of 17, does that sound like the Lord is with you? On the surface, you might not think so. To be taken as a slave into Potiphar's house, would you think that would be a situation where you go, oh, it's okay. The hand of the Lord is with me. To have false charges put in front of you and believed, would you be thinking, it'll be fine. The Lord's with me. To be thrown into prison on those false charges, Lord's with me. And then now to be here in this situation. And it goes to show us a principle. And I want us to take a little bit of time on this principle to really think about it. But it says, the Lord, the covenant God, is he going to keep his covenant? What's the real overwhelming covenant promise that God has made in Genesis to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob? Descendants as many as the stars? And what else? I'm going to give you this land. Says it will be for your descendants after you. And God is still holding to his covenant promises. And now, here he is. Lord is with Joseph and extended kindness to him. And I want you to notice, how did that kindness affect him? What did it do? Yeah. It says, and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. Do you notice who's in control of favor? God is. Have you ever maybe taken a new job and you come into the workplace and there's somebody there who all of a sudden, it just seems like things just click. And you go, man, they really seem to be able to show me favor. They don't know me very well, but we really get along well. Maybe it's even your manager or your boss. And you go, how did this happen? Sometimes we become arrogant and we go, well, it must be because I have a good personality or because we just share some things in common. And who do we leave out? Look at what God's done. Look at how he's provided. He's given me favor. And look at how this is. Now, I want you to take this principle about the Lord being with Joseph, about really seeing why. All through Genesis, when you look at Joseph, very seldom do you see something that is not something that we should imitate and be part of, to be patient and wait on the Lord. You see him doing that. But I want to show you a principle. Look over just a real quick story. Look over at the book of Joshua. Look at Joshua chapter 5. It's kind of an oddball story, the way that it fits in the book of Joshua. It's just three verses. Joshua chapter 5, we're going to start in verse 13. And the timing of what's going on here in the book of Joshua is the children of Israel have gathered. They've already crossed over the Jordan River on dry ground, even while it was in flood stage, like kind of like God showing off. And all of a sudden, they get to this point, and they're getting ready in chapter 6 to go and take Jericho. High-walled city, very well fortified. And all of a sudden, in just these three little verses, they've just partaken of the Passover to remember about God taking care of his people. The man has already been cut off. And then you get to verse 13. It says, now it came about when Joshua was by Jericho that he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man was standing opposite him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said to him, are you for us or for our adversaries? You imagine, here's Joshua, army's there. He looks across and he sees this man and his sword is drawn. Now, typically, whenever you see somebody and their sword is drawn, what are you expecting? Usually you might think, a fight? Is this an enemy? And sure enough, Joshua approaches him and asks him, exactly point blank, the question you would expect. Are you for us or for our adversaries? In other words, are you for Israel or are you for Jericho? Seems like a pertinent question, doesn't it? And then notice the answer. Verse 14. He said, no. Are you for us or are you for our adversaries, our enemies? He says, no. That's not what was probably expected. He says, no, rather I indeed come now as captain of the host of the Lord. Oh, he's not dealing in terms of Israel and Jericho. He says, I come now as captain of the host of the covenant God. He says, I'm in charge of a different army. Now, at the same time, you look at that and you might expect him to say, well, then why whenever Joshua said, are you for us or are you for our adversaries, that you didn't say you're for us? Because we're God's people. But I want you to notice the response in verse 14. Joshua's response is not really words first, it's actions first. He says, and Joshua fell on his face to the earth and bowed down and said to him, what has my Lord to say to his servant? He says, I have come to listen. I have bowed down before you. Verse 15. Do you notice how that the captain of the Lord of hosts didn't say, it's okay, I'm with you. Now we're thinking about our story there in Genesis 39 about that the Lord was with Joseph. But now here, I mean, this is Joshua. Moses has died. Joshua is now taking Moses' place. Knowing those things, wouldn't you kind of expect the commander of the Lord of hosts to say, in our terminology, I got your back. Let's go. You for us or you for our adversaries? Nope. That's not where my line's drawn. He says, my line's different. Joshua falls down before him on his face, bows down. What has my Lord to say to his servant? And notice the one and only thing that this commander talks about with Joshua. Verse 15. The captain of the Lord's host said to Joshua, remove your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy. Here's Joshua. You tell me what you want me to do. He says, you remember about holiness and you address it accordingly. Where you're standing is holy ground. Now, I want you to think about the situation from what I assume you probably already know. Is Israel and everyone within it completely and totally holy to God? No. Is everybody who's in Jericho completely and totally profane to God? No. Because who lives in Jericho? Rahab. And she has such great faith in the God of Israel. And the people in Jericho, their hearts melted 40 years ago when they heard about God's people coming out of Egypt and crossing over the Red Sea on dry ground. And she's going to be responding out of faith to hide those two spies that are coming or that have already been there and have left. And you realize, and then yet in Israel, there's a man by the name of Achan that whenever they destroy, whenever the Lord tears down the walls of Jericho because Israel's been obedient to what God commanded them to do for 7 days, and they've been completely told, everything in this city is under a ban. None of this is for you, but what's Achan going to do? He's going to take some of the things that should be dedicated to God. And because of that, him and his family is going to be utterly destroyed. Can you understand why the commander of the Lord's army is saying, are you for us or for our enemies? Nope. That's not where my line's drawn. What's his line drawn on? What's holy? He says, if you want the Lord to be with you, where do you need to walk? You better do what's holy behavior. What do you see in Joseph? What's he doing? Is his behavior holy? Is he being righteous? Is it, well, God sold me off. My own brothers did it when I was 17. If I want to sleep and do some great evil with this woman, don't you think I'm entitled to it? He doesn't do anything like that, does he? That wouldn't be holy behavior. He doesn't throw up a stink from what's written down whenever all of a sudden, hey, that woman's lying against me. I didn't do any of those things. Throw me into prison. Lord can take care of me there too. See, when you get focused on what's holy, what happens to all these situations in life? What do you know? God will take care of you. He will carry you. Now, you start to understand this principle. Lord is with you. Now, here in Joshua, look down at Joshua chapter 6 and look at verse 27. Just the last phrase, Joshua 6:27. So the Lord, the covenant God, was with Joshua, and his fame was in all the land. God's going to be with Joshua. Why? What kind of behavior are you going to see in Joshua? Honor of God, righteous, holy. He's been a man of faith even 40 years ago, right? When those 10 other spies were saying, we're so small compared to these people of Canaan. Joshua and Caleb said what? With God, we can conquer them. Let's go. And realize, and yet he has to endure the wilderness. And he doesn't complain about it either. See, if we want the Lord to be with us, we're going to have to decide. Do we want to walk in what's holy or not? Because that decision will make that outcome. Let me just pose the question this way. In all your understanding of Scripture, 1,189 chapters from Genesis 1 to Revelation 22, how many holy people who had behavior like what God desires were utterly destroyed? Were not taken care of in the end. Who are, even if they died like Stephen, they didn't get to go be with the Lord. Can you think of any? Anybody? What's that tell us? God's faithful. If we'll be a holy people, you know that the Lord will be with us. Now, let's flip that question around. How many people walked away from holy behavior? And what happened to them? Lost, destroyed, utterly distressed, worried. You see things like that, don't we? Wouldn't it be wonderful to know by faith, if I walk in what is holy, I know the Lord will be with me. If my sins are completely washed away by the blood of Christ, by His promise, and I'm going to strive to walk in what is holy, I know He'll take care of me even when the circumstances around me are not just. What will you find? Will you find peace in the midst of the storm? Will you find hope that is reassuring and encouraging? That is written on every page of these scriptures. Do we believe it? Chuck. They become totally wicked. God, even at the tail end of Leviticus, talks about He's going to vomit them out of the land because of how profane they were. Now, let's kick this over to the new covenant. Look over at 1 Peter chapter 3. Yes. Right. Right. And you think of those, what Shea brings out is great. Making sure that we look at it through the spiritual mindset, not the physical. If you want to think about it, 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 7, if I'm remembering it right, talks about we walk by faith, not by sight. But yet, what do we absorb more things through? Sight. So we're going to have to learn to change the way we think, right? So, 1 Peter chapter 3, look down at verse 13. Who is there to harm you if you've proved zealous for what is good? Who's going to hurt you? Now, we might naturally want to look at that question and go, oh, fantastic, nobody. But look at the next verse, because that's not the conclusion. Verse 14. But even if you should suffer for the sake of righteousness, you are blessed. Now notice, this is not tied around suffering for evil or suffering for, you know, wrong motives or for wrong actions. This is about suffering for the sake of righteousness. If you start looking back at the life of Joseph, what is he suffering for? Doing wrong? He's suffering for doing what's right. I mean, he went up there to Dothan to check on his brothers because that's what his father commanded him to do. So he's doing what he was asked to do. And so you notice the statement here. He says, but even if you should suffer for the sake of righteousness, you are blessed. And this Greek word for blessed is one that has to do with two things in particular. Number one, favor from God. The second, and how long will that favor last? It'll last as long as you hold to the same characteristics. So as long as you're willing to continue to suffer for the sake of righteousness, what will God see you as? You have His favor. Did Joseph have the favor of God after he was sold off by his brothers? Did he have the favor of God whenever he was a slave in Potiphar's house? Did he have the favor of God, we'll see a little bit more of that, whenever here he is in prison? He still has it. It's amazing. Mankind can warp and change things, but it doesn't change what God's doing. To still be able to bless him in the midst of these different situations. Notice how it continues. Even if you should suffer for the sake of righteousness, you are blessed. Not you will be, not you could be, but you are. Is that important? Is that important to you? It's important to me. He says, and do not fear their intimidation and do not be troubled. What will they try to do? Intimidate you. Hey, look, unless you start lying on this report, you're going to get fired. What's that? Intimidation. And what are they trying to get you to get away from? Righteousness, honesty, integrity. He says, don't be troubled. Don't have any fear. Suffer for what's righteous. He says, do not fear their intimidation. They're sure going to try. Do not be troubled. Verse 15. But how are you supposed to act in these moments? But sanctify Christ as Lord in your heart. All of a sudden, here's this intimidation to try and get you to swerve away from what's righteous. He says, what must we do? Lord, I'm going to make sure that I have set you upon the throne of my heart. And of course, sanctify is always tied to what? Holiness. The Lord is in a place in my heart that is holy. I don't view anybody else's commands are thinking the same way I view His. He is not common. I'm going to sanctify Him as Lord over my heart. How many of your decisions do you make in your heart? All of them. So when it comes down time to go, well, I hate to lose my job right now. It's a hard market. I'm going to sanctify the Lord. And I'm going to let Him be the one that I obey. I want His favor. Because He stands in complete control. And then to go, he says, the next aspect, Christ is Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you. Now, I don't know how many times in my life I've heard verse 15 that means you have to have some kind of spiritual answer for every question somebody could ever ask you. That is not what that verse is saying, is it? It's saying that whenever people are trying to intimidate you and to trouble you, and you can keep on walking with Christ as Lord over your hearts, and you have a hopeful expectation. I want you to think about the way we talk about faith. Faith is the substance, is the assurance of things hoped for. I've got hope because I know the covenant God who made the promise. And He keeps His promises. And so hear people going, oh, man, you know, aren't you concerned you're going to lose your job? You know, I noticed on that report you didn't lie about those numbers the way he told you to. And I know he told you to because I could hear him way out here in my office. How can you still have such a good attitude? Let me tell you about the hope I have. Let me tell you about the Lord I serve. Let me tell you about who's sitting on the throne of my heart. And he demands integrity. He demands honesty. And I'm not going to swerve away from it. And I don't care if I get fired for it. But I'm going to have the right attitude. Now, what do you think that does to someone else? It's been nice knowing you. I'll put in a good word if you give me a chance. I'll write you a letter of recommendation for somebody else. You're not going to be here very long. And then all of a sudden, management comes in and they clean house, but you still have a job. It's amazing how the Lord can do those things, isn't it? And it's not that he always does. Sometimes we need to be somewhere else. But notice how it continues here. Sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and reverence. So whenever I answer the boss's question, I'm still going to show him some honor, even though he doesn't deserve it. I'll still show him honor. And whenever I talk to him, I'm not going to raise my voice. Gentleness. See, this sound like the fruit of the Spirit? An aspect of that fruit of the Spirit, gentleness and patience and kindness. You start to think through these things. And he says, yet with gentleness and reverence. Verse 16. And keep a good conscience, so that in the thing in which you are slandered, those who defile your good behavior in Christ will be put to shame. When you hear keep a good conscience, what do you think of? Someone tells you to keep a good conscience. What do you draw out of that? Okay, someone who's been close to God. Purity. Doing what's right when no one's looking. If you notice the way it's phrased here, it doesn't say get a good conscience. It says keep. How do you keep a good conscience? Doing what you know is right. It's as simple as that, isn't it? Do what you know is right. Keep doing what's right. I mean, if you think about the way James talks about it, to him who knows the right thing to do and doesn't do it, to him it is sin. Sin. James chapter 4. So you see this picture. Keep a good conscience. Gentle, reverence, make sure and do what is right and holy according to the Lord. He says, so that in the thing in which you are slandered, guess what's coming? Somebody's going to slander you. They're going to either bring things up from the way off long past and warp it and shape it to where you look guilty, or maybe they'll just flat out lie about you. They'll go ahead and change the report to put the liar's figures in there. Figures never lie, but liars sure can figure. So they'll put that in there. And then all of a sudden when it comes down to go, where'd you get this number from? Well, Carrie Terry gave me that number. I didn't give that number. He says, and all of a sudden, if you're going to keep a good conscience, you don't have to go back and go, is this one of those times where I didn't do it right? You go, no, I was going to honor the Lord. And you realize, whenever they're going to slander you, he says, those who revile, they verbally abuse your good behavior. You know what you're going to do to our department if you keep on putting those figures out there? You're going to destroy us all. He says, and you're going to get what's coming to you. They'll call you all kinds of things. They'll verbally abuse you. They don't mind. He says, those who revile your good behavior in Christ will be put to shame. But guess what's always coming? Truth stands by itself, doesn't it? Whenever you don't have to fear whenever truth gets unveiled, whenever you realize when truth gets unveiled, all it does is go, what does it do to all the behavior? You kept a good conscience, don't have anything to be concerned about. Don't have to wonder. You go, I know I have the favor of the Lord because I'm going to only do it His way. Now, we may make mistakes along the way trying to figure out what is the right way. But we know what it is. We sure better choose it. Because notice this next thought in verse 17. For it is better, and that may be putting it a little light, for it is better if God should will it so that you suffer for doing what is right rather than for doing what is wrong. Now this is my dumb mindset for half a second. You read verse 17, who's going to suffer? Everybody is. You can suffer for doing what's right, or you can suffer for doing what's wrong. Which way you want to suffer? I'd rather suffer for doing what's right. Because then who do I know is with me? The Lord's with me. But if I'm going to suffer for doing what's wrong, who's all that on? That's all on me. I got nobody's favor. I'm not blessed. I'm not working off of anybody's covenant promises that are good. I'm going to have to suffer a long ways down for it. Isn't it something when you make up your mind? You know what? If I have to suffer either way, I might as well just be smart and suffer for what's right. Now, you see these pictures. And of course, this is Peter's point about choosing righteousness, choosing holiness, choosing the Lord as your God, keeping a good conscience. And you go, and I am with you. And even beyond that, here's His Spirit to be in us, in our heart. Now, come back to Genesis chapter 39. So when you look at verse 21, it says, but the Lord, the covenant God, was with Joseph and extended kindness to him and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. Now, chiefs are higher than captains, just in case you're reading through this chapter. And to go, this is the chief jailer. I'm here because of some trumped up charges that aren't true. I got to that place because my own brother sold me off. And yet, the Lord has been with me all the way. So you take note here, gave him favor. And that's, once again, notice the way verse 21 is constructed. But the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him and gave him favor. The Lord is the one that gave him the favor in the sight of the chief jailer. Isn't that amazing? I'll tell you, if you want a parallel to read on your own, read the first chapter of Daniel. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, along with many others, have been taken captive by the Babylonians because of the wickedness of the nation. And when they go, what do they choose to do? They're given all these of the king's provisions to eat, the best of the best. And yet, what do they say? Oh, we couldn't eat this food, whatever it was. You know, maybe it was pork. I don't know what it was. But going, as a Jew, whatever it was, we can't eat that. Why would they make a statement like that? They wanted holy behavior to honor God. And they do it in an honorable way. They actually go to the person who's in charge of them and they say, can we not eat these provisions and have something different? And his first response is, you're going to get me killed. And then Daniel proposes, how about just 10 days? He says, I'll let you do it for 10 days. And sure enough, at the end of those 10 days, how do they look? They look better than the king's choicest food of those others who were eating. And it talks about in Daniel chapter 1, and it says that God's the one who gave them favor. And why did he show them favor? Because they had holy behavior. They were going to do it God's way. Even though they were completely outnumbered, even though they were in a foreign country, even though their own chief over them or manager originally says no, they make an appeal. And God grants them favor. Do we think God lacks ability to do that for us? Keep choosing what is godly, holy, righteous. Here's God saying, that is who I will be with. If you think back to the commander of the Lord of hosts, of going, are you for us or are you for our adversaries? And basically what he says is, I'm for what's holy. And that is who I fight for. You want him to fight for you? We're going to have to make some holy choices and set the Lord as on the throne of our heart. And so you see here in verse 21, and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer, verse 22. The chief jailer committed to Joseph's charge all the prisoners who were in the jail, so that whatever was done there, he was responsible for it. Oh, joy! I get to be over all the prisoners in the prison. Now, I mean, sometimes we look at these situations and go, that doesn't sound like favor. That doesn't sound like the Lord being with him, getting more responsibilities. Is he getting paid more? No, not at all. He's still in prison. And yet, because of his holy behavior, how does he react? What do you expect? Still going to do his best. Nobody's paying me anymore. How many times you see workers at a job? I'm doing more than this of my coworker over here, and I'm not getting paid as much as they get paid, and so what happens to their work ethic? I shouldn't have to work this hard. And who are we forgetting who we serve? We don't serve this mere boss who's over us. We serve the Lord. The Lord's bondservant is the way it's talked about in the New Testament. And you see Joseph. I mean, the chief jailer sees what's going on and committed to Joseph's charge all the prisoners who were in the jail so that whatever was done there, he was responsible for it. You almost feel like he just hands over the keys. Like, now make sure everything goes well. Verse 23. The chief jailer did not supervise anything under Joseph's charge. Notice why. The fourth time in the chapter. Because the Lord, the covenant God, was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord, the covenant God, made to prosper. Could the chief jailer tell that it was the Lord God who was doing it? He could. Now, think about this statement from the Sermon on the Mount. When Jesus is talking, he's talking about salt and light. So he's talking about those who had the characteristics of the Beatitudes in those first 12, 13 verses. And then Jesus goes on to say, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Does Joseph have an ability to do that? By what he's doing, they know, you know what, this isn't just Joseph. This is his God at work. Oh, that's wonderful. You ever received a compliment? Kind of nice every once in a while. And how often do we go, why do I put in extra work? Why do I still work hard if I don't get paid? Because that's the God I serve. Are we willing to give Him the glory and the honor so that they may be able to see, oh, you serve a risen Savior. Oh, you serve the God who created the heavens and the earth and the universe and all that's in them. They may not say those words. They may just say, that makes me feel uncomfortable. Okay. Still true. And you realize, here's what's brought together. This chief jailer could see it. He gladly put things in Joseph's control, his charge. And if you notice, and whatever Joseph did, the Lord made it to prosper. Is Joseph making a bunch of money? Is that what prosper is about? No. This is about a name. This is about integrity, respect, those kind of things. And the Lord gave it to him. Now, Lord willing, next week we'll come back and we'll see what the Lord does with this next in chapter 40. Have a good week.